right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here, unfortunately, alone once again. Obviously, John and Chuck were back last episode, but we're going to still keep doing these interviews for a bit. We actually haven't totally settled on what the schedule is going to be like through the preseason and into the season, but we do know that we will all be doing one weekly episode as normal, the regular show, and then we will probably have a second episode every week that's like this with an interview or John or Chuck interviewing somebody. I can tell you in the preseason, things to look forward to is we'll have four episodes in October with all three of us, the better or worse previews and the two-part over-under show, but they won't necessarily be released weekly, so just make sure you are subscribing so you don't miss any of the goodness. Today's episode, though, will be about the Pelicans, and also after the interview with Mason Ginsburg, stick around. We check back in with Adam Mahrez of the Denver Nuggets and one of the jokes I made with him. But before we get to the Pelicans, I want to tell you guys about the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast that has been killing it all offseason with their series Basketball Mysteries of the 70s, covering a decade of the league that is full of great stories, but a lot of us don't know a ton about. So make sure you subscribe and listen to the Over and Back podcast as Rich and Jason entertain and inform about NBA history. It's available on iTunes, on Stitcher, at Hardwood Paroxysm. Listen, subscribe, write them a rating. The Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. And speaking of ratings, there are a few days left in September for the Fan Essentials giveaway. All you have to do is write a 5-star iTunes review and you will be entered to win a Fan Essentials box. If we get up to 10 reviews this month, we will give out 2 Fan Essentials boxes. Remember, Fan Essentials is a subscription service that has unique gear and collectible for NBA, NFL, and some college teams. Go to fanessentials.net, use the code FBBF when you check out to get 30% off your subscription. So go to fanessentials.net, use the code FBBF, and get all the essentials you need. My guest today is Mason Ginsburg. He's a writer for Bourbon Street Shots, the ESPN True Hoop affiliate for the Pelicans. Mason, how's it going?
Going well. Last podcast of the night, trying to knock them all out in succession. So this is number 4, but I got Pelicans on the mind, so I'm happy to join.
This is great. You're doing the world a great service. You've been marathon recording, adding Pelicans content to the internet that so vastly, desperately needs it and wants it.
I hope so.
That's right. Hopefully we'll spread these releases out, but definitely all Pelicans fans out there, make sure we don't overload you with Mason, but never have never have too much, right?
Nobody wants that, I promise you.
All right, well, obviously you cover the Pelicans. It's my understanding you live in New Orleans. Is that correct?
I do not, actually. I spent the first 25 or so years of my life there, but I'm now working in Chicago. So.
Oh, you're in Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
But you did so 25 years in New Orleans. Impressive. Mm-hmm. So one of our gimmicks of our show is we talk about breakfast a lot. It's right there in the title. I have a question about the New Orleans breakfast. I'm well aware of the beignets, the Café du Monde. I love them. Mm-hmm. My question is, do locals look down on Café du Monde as like a tourist trap?
No, I don't think so. I will say, you know, for all the great food elements of New Orleans, I don't think New Orleans does breakfast terribly well. Like I spent 2 years in Austin for grad school, and I miss breakfast tacos every day of my life in Chicago. But as far as New Orleans is concerned, you know, I think I enjoy beignets every now and then. I don't think it's overly touristy. I roll my eyes when I see other, like I think I saw a restaurant here in Chicago have beignets on the dessert menu, and I just kind of shook my head. But no, I mean, I think most New Orleanians appreciate a good beignet.
I mean, I don't try to live my life by what other people think, but it is one of those things where I'm eating it and I'm like, is this one of those things where, like, I don't know, like people come to Nashville and they eat at Pancake Pantry, which is just a pancake place. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's like Voodoo Donuts in Portland. And I'm not trying to offend people, but it's like, it's donuts. Like we're standing in line for a donut. Like it's all right, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah. All right, good. So you do mention breakfast tacos. Is that your favorite breakfast food?
I think, yeah, I was spoiled with my 2 years in Austin. I do love them. I mean, as far as, you know, some of the standard stuff, I mean, I'll enjoy a good omelet, but I think I think breakfast tacos have to be number one for me.
I can't complain with that. I mean, that's absolutely a fantastic choice. Okay, moving on to the Pelicans. In some ways, I feel like I'm a Grizzlies fan, and I feel like we've kind of our teams have traveled a weird similar path. In that, like, we were
better or for worse.
Yeah. Like we were kind of good, and then we were like, all right, now we're gonna be better. And then last year, both teams were just devastated with injury. I feel like the Grizzlies got a little more attention, I guess, because they actually squeaked in the playoffs and they had that record 28 players on the roster. But the Pelicans were equally obliterated with injury. By the end of the year, they were rolling out pretty much a D-League team with, you know, Anthony Davis, and then they finally, you know, shut him down. I know a lot of people who were Jaeger fans were always pointing to, like, you know, like, Jaeger got the Grizzlies into the playoffs, and I was always pointing out, like, the Pelicans have a better record over the last 20 games, and they have a much worse squad, I think. You know, like, we still at least have a couple starters left. And, unfortunately, that parallel keeps going where both teams now going into this season still have some unanswered injury questions, like lingering injuries that won't go away. So, what update can you give us on some of those? Like, I know Tyreke Evans, rumors like he might not play this year, and same with Quincy Pondexter. So what's going on with the injuries with those guys?
Yeah. First, I remember thinking about hearing all that about the Grizzlies and the record number of players. And I was looking, and I think the Pelicans had 18 different players play at least 250 minutes last year. And it's kind of a random stat, but I think it just goes to show you how many guys they had to use in, like, for actual meaningful minutes. And
right.
I feel like, yeah, like you said, the Grizzlies made the playoffs, but the Pelicans injuries were kind of, you know, I think people are just so used to it by now that it just, they just like, oh yeah, Pelicans are hurt again.
Right. And you guys started off the season hurt, where it was like in preseason, it was like, well, they're hurt, so they're probably not going to be as good as we thought they were going to be. And then
Nate Robinson was our opening night starting point guard against the Golden State Warriors.
that's an incredible stat that I absolutely forgot. Yeah, I can't even picture him. I mean, I remember when you guys traded for Ish Smith, and it was like Pelicans are hot because, like, you guys won a couple games and had, you know, like, Ish was putting up some silly fantasy numbers and such. But
yeah, so they signed Ish and then traded him for 2 second-round picks from to Philly. That was actually a good move.
You guys cashed in on Hinkie having his power removed. You guys cashed in immediately, getting those second round picks.
Yeah, there you go.
That was a good play. All right, so. Well, so what is the injury? So is there any update on Tyreke Evans? I know on Media Day I was looking. I didn't see much information on – it's just the indefinite, like Tyreke Evans and Quincy Pondexter. Like, no one knows when they're coming back.
Yeah, the real news was Quincy. With Tyreke, it's been known locally for a little while now that – I mean, he had 3 knee surgeries within a 12-month period, and he was never going to start the season healthy. And the question was, is he even going to play for New Orleans again? So, I mean, the offseason moves were clearly made without the intention of having Tyreke for a meaningful portion of the season. And so when is he going to be healthy? I don't know. You can look at his Instagram and see videos of him playing ball and maybe looking okay. But I mean, the reality is that he's still a ways from returning, and, you know, maybe December or January for him. But I don't think anyone really knows the answer there. The big surprise, was Quincy Pondexter, because while the Pelicans never said he was going to be back opening night, you know, he's been out for a full season, and he, you know, via a tweet here and there, really made it seem like he was going to be back. And then we get this bomb dropped on us that he's not going to be back till maybe around. So that was unexpected. And he's such a valuable part of the team. I mean, as you know, I know he didn't have the greatest of tenure in Memphis, but he was one of the biggest reasons the Pelicans made the playoffs the year before last. His addition as pretty much, outside of Jrue Holiday, the best 3-and-D guy the Pelicans had on the perimeter, and they really missed him last year. And we were hoping that even if the knee wasn't, you know, even if it wasn't 100% of the player he was before the injury, he would be there to help. And now, you know, we're hearing that he's going to be out for maybe the first couple of months, and it's just, you know, that's over a full season, and you just start to wonder what's going on.
Right. I think it's run into 16 months now, that injury. And yeah, as you mentioned, he was horrible on the Grizzlies. I mean, people remember one end of the year. Well, they actually remember the Spurs Western Conference Finals where the Grizzlies got swept, but Quincy Pondexter was the only guy who played well. Like, he hit his shots for 4 games. And then, but other than that, like he was literally he had one of the worst PERs, one of the worst like box plus minuses. Like the coaches hated him, and so it was interesting when he got traded. They finally gave up and sent him to the Pelicans. He did out of the blue, like he hit his full potential. Like he shot great, helped you guys grab that eighth seed, get in the playoffs. But yeah, now we still haven't seen him. I wonder if you know. Do you know if he still searches Twitter for his name? Because he used to do that all the time. Because every time you tweet something mean about him, he would always favorite. So that was always. I assume that's how he got himself motivated.
Well, I guess we haven't had any reason to say anything mean about him. Right.
Oh yeah, he was good. He's been good for you guys. Yeah, yeah.
He was good, and then it was get well soon. We miss you. Right. So
I mean, I'm not adding. Like I don't at people when I say something like man, that was a really horrible game by Quincy, you know, or whatever. Like we really need Quincy to shoot, you know, like over 28% or something, and he's all like favoring everyone, and I'm like, well, this guy, he searches. All right, but combined with those injuries and then the bigger than basketball news of Drew Holiday taking a leave to be with his wife. So going because of that, you're missing these guys, and you guys had what was, I think, consensus, like a pretty good offseason signing a bunch of value guys. But with those guys missing, with Drew Holiday not there on opening night, in your mind, what's the optimism level like in New Orleans or around the team, and what are they expecting from this year? Are they still thinking playoffs, or so, like, what's the level of expectation there?
Kind of bummed. It's just like, what else can possibly go wrong, you know? But I think before the Drew Holiday news came out, I had the Pelicans pegged as a fringe playoff team, maybe around 40 wins that could squeeze in the playoffs if these guys like Etuan Moore and Solomon Hill and even Terrence Jones were able to kind of maximize their potential and take a step forward. But now that Drew's going to be out for a month, I think that's I think playoffs are slipping away already. And so it's tough, but there's still things to look for. Obviously, you still have a young 23-year-old Anthony Davis who is still under contract for a few more years. And so if the guys at the Pelicans added, like, that who are going to be under contract for a few years, like Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore, if they can prove that they were worth the money, and I think for Moore, it'll be a little easier to justify than Hill. But I'm confident both can do it. It's just a question of how what kind of steps can both those guys take, and that'll really help to create optimism moving forward.
Yep. So that they signed Tim Frazier, Etuan Moore, Langston Galloway, and Solomon Hill, and all these guys, like, they, you know, it's, I guess the numbers are bigger than a lot of, you know, casual fans would, they were surprised, but like they were all fair contracts. All these guys are decent NBA players. But it seems like all of those guys in my mind are more like an awesome bench unit, you know, like those would be like on a playoff team. I'm thinking like, these might be your 6th through 9th guys or your 7th through 10th guys, but they kind of get promoted and you're expecting a lot as starters. Is that how you see them, or do you see them in a different light?
With the exception of Solomon Hill, I agree with you. And that's kind of like, that's really what hurt the most last season. Is like, even I'll use the guy I've probably burned more than almost anyone else is Norris Cole. And like at the end of the 2 years ago, he was legitimately helpful for the Pelicans, playing like 10 to 15 minutes a night off the bench, playing decent defense, getting a spark plug, and that was fine. And then last year with all the injuries, he suddenly had to play 30, 35 minutes a night, and it was just everyone was so angry with the way he played because it was just not it was not helpful at all. And so you start to worry about, I mean, no one's got that kind of style that he has for New Orleans this year. But yeah, I mean, there are concerns that these players are thrust into big roles that are bigger than was intended, and it, results in negative results. But I think they brought in Solomon Hill and they're paying him like a starter, and they want him, they see him playing major minutes. I think ideal state was Quincy Pondexter being healthy and Hill splitting his minutes between the 3 and maybe small ball 4 with AD at the 5. But without Quincy, you're really just strapped. You're going to either play Hill at the 4 with a lot of 3-guard line with 3-guard lineups, which I think will actually happen a decent amount. You'll see some 3-guard lineups especially when Drew comes back, and then some minutes for Solomon Hill at the 3. So I think, I think the plan was for him to get, 35 minutes a night. I think they really believe in him and that what they saw from him in Indiana, albeit in a relatively small sample size. But yeah, I mean, Etuan Moore, I think, was brought in to be a combo 3rd guard, which I think he is more than capable of handling. He showed
He's been a solid three. He's not going to be a 45% three-point shooter like he was last year in Chicago, but he's been a solid three-point shooter his entire college and NBA career. And he's been he can guard both the point guard and shooting guard position. So he's been he's a reliable third guard, I believe. But obviously with Drew Holiday being out to start the year, he's going to have a larger role, and we'll see. I mean, he handled it for the Bulls last year reasonably well, so I'm optimistic. But it puts more pressure on the guys like Langston Galloway, Tim Frazier, Buddy Hield. We'll see how it all works out.
Yeah, and again, mentioning the Quincy Pondexter, or like you mentioned, the forward position, that is one of the big. That's one of the big holes on the roster, where you mentioned a three-guard lineup, and I think maybe NBA fans, we're kind of hoping we see more of a three-guard lineup with Anthony Davis at the center, as opposed to like sizing up, where I feel like I'm looking at all these other depth charts on they have like Dante Cunningham or Solomon Hill penciled in at the three, and I'm just like, yeah, like can we stop the Asik Davis and then another biggish type guy, even like Alonzo G, like. I'm agreeing. That's where that not having Quincy, who is a true, like kind of small forward, a wing, does really hurt. One of the good things about the guys that you guys brought in, even if they are kind of have been never had a bigger role and feel more like backups, is a lot of the analytics kind of say, and I'm not a huge analytics expert, but from my understanding, it seems like these are guys who have really good, like pretty good box plus minuses, have good win shares, and the guys they lost, while they put up traditional stats, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, had kind of negative ones. So it's like, I guess there is a hope that maybe it's like an analytic dream of like, maybe we can pick these guys out of the rough. And if we give their minutes over, that maybe they actually will, like it won't be a step back. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pelicans are trying to shrink the variance, so to speak, in regards to, they had Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, who are great offensively, but just totally tanked the defense. And now you've got guys who are above average defensive players that the hope is that they can excel defensively and then the offense can stay afloat so they can do certain things. So like the Pelicans added these guys who are also better passers. They don't shoot the ball as well as Gordon and Anderson, but they do other things well. And so I think the versatility, the ability for a lot of these guys to play multiple positions, like compared to Eric Gordon was a shooting guard and only a shooting guard. He's a secondary ball handler. He really didn't do much. He couldn't guard any other positions. So and Ryan Anderson is a power forward. He guarded centers when he played with AD, but I mean, he's not going to play small forward. So that's, they were what they were. And so you've added some less offensive firepower, but you have more versatile players who can do more and play more roles, which I think really help an Alvin Gentry system.
Do you think Alvin Gentry system, is he going to adjust at all? Because we heard so much about, we thought it was going to be a fast paced high offense, and the guys they brought in are all more, like you say, versatile, which is, yeah, they're better defenders. Like they're all more plus defenders than the guys they had. Is it still the plan to play more of a fast pace, getting up and down the court? Or is there any thought that, like, based on the limitations of the roster and the lack of the offense, that maybe they do need to slow it down?
No, I think that the team is still very suited to play in an up-tempo style. I mean, yeah, especially if you have Anthony Davis at the five, that's a run and gun team right there. And so I think they'll still try to play up-tempo. They've got guys who are all young and athletic. That was kind of one of the themes of Media Day, was talking about how the team is young and teams are. Now, I think this may have been Lance Stevenson who said it, so take it with a massive grain of salt, because we don't even know if he's going to make the team. But yeah, talking about how younger guys are just better equipped and inherently to play this fast tempo kind of game. And so I think that's still the plan. I mean, I don't think you're going to see Mike D'Antoni Rockets offense fast, but I mean, the goal is to really, cause I mean, especially with a team like with a roster like the Pelicans have now, who maybe won't be the best half court offense, transition may benefit them. So I think that's still something I definitely look to see this year.
Yeah, you mentioned Lance Stevenson. Do you think the Pelicans signed him because he scored 33 on them last year in a fantastic Grizzlies Pelicans game, which I've actually watched like several times because it's still on my DVR?
I think we see one of two situations play out with Lance, and it's extremely correlated to the projections for Drew Holiday. If they think Drew's only going to miss a couple weeks and come back in mid-November or so, I think the odds of Lance making the team go pretty far down. Whereas if It looks like Drew might be out for the entire month of November into early December, and Lance has a decent training camp / preseason. I think, you know, I think they will look to see about, you know, bringing him in. And, you know, I think the most likely casualty just logically is Alonzo G. He's Anthony Davis's best friend on the roster, but I think AD would understand if, you know, this is something that needs to happen for the team to have their best shot at making the playoffs. I don't think AD is going to say no. And Alonzo G's contract's guaranteed. He's still getting his money. So I think that is the most likely casualty. Just by a quick look at the roster, that just makes the most sense. So we'll see. Like I said, I think it's dependent on Drew Holiday's status.
Yep. Is bringing in Terrence Jones Anthony Davis's buddy? Can he not fill in that best buddy role for Alonzo G?
I would think so. I mean, those two guys are tight. Terrence Jones had the opportunity to sign for more than the minimum elsewhere. I mean, not much more, but he chose New Orleans because of the opportunity presented itself, being able to play with you know, a guy he played with at Kentucky and won a championship with, Anthony Davis. And so injuries are obviously a huge issue for him. He had about as horrible of a year as you could imagine in Houston last year. You look back the last summer, Zach Lowe was writing about him potentially raking in eight figures a year, and then last season happened. So Pelicans, you know, took a flyer at the minimum, and Jones is going to be incredibly motivated, both from a financial perspective and from a respect perspective. I mean, he wants to bounce back, and so I'm really intrigued to see what he can do for New Orleans this year.
Yeah, Terrence Jones is a guy I think that a lot of NBA fans, as his stock kept dropping, I feel like most of us are being like, that guy's pretty good, right? Like, can't we get him? So it does seem like it's a good signing for the Pelicans. Obviously, you know, not much risk signing him for the minimum with a guy with a huge potential upside. Do you think that he is maybe tied to whatever, like, the best case scenarios that Pelicans fans have for the season?
Absolutely. And that's like, he's my X factor number one. It seems with the Drew Holiday absence, I think staying afloat is highly tied to what's Terrence Jones we're getting, just because you look at all the other guys. So Tim Frazier is going to replace Drew Holiday at starting point guard. He can do some of the stuff that Drew can do offensively, but defensively, it's a huge drop off. And so what the Pelicans do to kind of right the defense will be important. Do you play Omer, who provides you next to nothing on offense, or can you play a Terrence Jones who, he's not the best defender, but he's better than Ryan Anderson was for New Orleans last year when he's healthy, that's for sure. And so he can defend centers. So, I mean, and given the chemistry that him and AD already have together, it's, you know, it's a very reasonable approach with the caveat that he hasn't been healthy. So he needs to be healthy for it to work out. So yeah, I do think that, you know, his status and being able to get back to where he was a couple of years ago is key to the Pelicans having any shot at making a run for the playoffs this year.
Yeah. And it does seem like that front court, like in theory on paper on NBA 2K, like Anthony Davis, Terrence Jones is the way to go. Like no one wants to watch Omar Asik play anymore. I mean, maybe there's, I don't know, his family, the country of Turkey perhaps, but it's like a, like he's a guy, it's funny. It's like again, mentioning the Grizzlies games, like 2 years ago, a couple years, the Pelicans had really good success against the Grizzlies, and it was just Anthony Davis pretty much embarrassing. Like, he would shut down Zebo and Mark Gasol. But Asik was a guy who always struggles so badly against Gasol that it makes me uncomfortable to watch. But anyway, do you think, but he still seems to be penciled in, like he's the starter. So is he still the starter alongside Davis?
I think so, and I think they'll look to play AD at center a decent amount, but only in the matchups that aren't too tough on his body. So, you know, I think against some of the teams that play small, you'll see Omer start and maybe play the first 5 minutes of each half, and then you won't see him again. Whereas, you know, against a team with maybe Dwight Howard or Andre Drummond, you'll see him for a few more minutes, you know. And there's a Jinsa too, but last year, I mean, he was good as last year in Armani, but last year he didn't really gel with Gentry's system particularly well. So he's still an X factor, whether or not he's going to see significant minutes. So yeah, I still think Omer is a starting center, but yeah, I don't see him playing more than, say, you know, 15 minutes a game or so.
Yep. Is and rounding out the starters, are we guessing that Solomon Hill is going to start at the three and then Tim Frazier at the point, and then who's going to do the two guard?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and I think Gentry and I may disagree on this, and you know, I'll talk to Dell and see who he wants to side with, but I'm pretty sure he's going to go with Gentry. And I was all for Buddy Hield starting when Drew was going to be starting at point guard, but now with Drew out, I'm very scared about the defense if it's a Tim Frazier or Buddy Hield backcourt. And so I'd much rather start Itwan, not much rather, because I understand the counter argument of you want to get Buddy acclimated to the NBA and you want to get him minutes. And so, I think Itwan Moore fits with Tim Frazier better. He can relieve a little bit of pressure from the ball handling perspective. Not that Frazier necessarily needs it, but especially on the defensive end, I think it matters. And so I think that makes more sense from if you want to work on if wins are your top priority, I think that makes more sense. But if developing Buddy early on in the season is more of a priority, I think I can understand the logic in starting Buddy, even though I don't think his minutes would change tremendously either way. I think he's still going to play a lot.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to have that additional ball handler alongside Tim Frazier. He said like he doesn't need it, but also this is a guy who's more of a backup, and he's going to be playing against first units all the time. And so, yeah, definitely having another ball handler will help. All right, so finally, what's your best case scenario? What's the narrative? What's the best case scenario narrative for the Pelicans this season?
So best case scenario is Drew misses maybe 2 weeks. I haven't heard regarding Lauren Holiday. I've heard nothing but optimism regarding the procedure. It's a benign tumor, and it's obviously sounds scary, but everything sounds like it's a fairly routine operation, and she has the best people caring for her. So just the question is when Drew is feels ready to return. So best case scenario, I think there is he's back in 2 weeks after the season starts. No injuries. We'll see. if Drew only misses a couple weeks, and Terrence Jones is the Terrence Jones of 2 years ago, and Buddy shoots close, in the upper 30s from 3-point range, and Solomon Hill continues the progression that he had at the end of last year and doesn't regress offensively. This team could still make a run for the playoffs. I don't think that's unreasonable, because I had them as a fringe playoff team before the Drew news came out. Although the Quincy Pondexter bit definitely does hurt them. I don't think the ceiling is much higher than it's not higher than a first round playoff exit. Like that's, right. I say that, but if they can get to the seventh seed and they get Pondexter back fully healthy, along with Drew and the rest of the guys, and they could give a team like the Clippers or Spurs some fits. I don't think they wouldn't win a series, but that's probably best case scenario.
And we also have barely mentioned that's also if Anthony Davis gets back on that ascendant path that he was on 2 years ago, where going into last year, everyone was like, this guy, he's one of the favorites for MVP, assuming he's going to go all the way to that next level and he plays all those games. All right. To close, just a couple of quick questions. Do you do Pellies? Pels? which one there? Either? Cans?
Pels. I keep it to one syllable. It's just easier.
Well, we're trying to get cans going. We kind of like just cans.
Then you don't know if it's the Pelicans or the toucans. Too many different birds.
There's no toucans. I mean, context clues. We're talking NBA. Just throw out cans a couple times this year and see how it goes over. What's more terrifying to you, the King Cake Baby or the original Pelican mascot?
God. Oh, man. The King Cake Baby's creepier. It's got to be. As far as my threatening for my life, it's first Pelican. The first Pelican's more threatening to my life, but the baby is definitely creepier.
I think, I'm more of the King Cake Baby is so self-aware. They made this being this will be real creepy. Yeah, that'll be funny. The first Pelican was just oh my God, what have you done? That was just pure nightmare fodder. And I don't think they knew it until they made it. And everyone was like children were screaming, like running away from it.
Probably one of my favorite days of Twitter ever was when the Pierre mascot, the original Pierre mascot was released. All the reactions to that was
I wish they stuck with it. I literally think if children weren't scared, they would have stuck with it. Because it actually was pretty funny to have something that horrific, like, and terrifying.
It was great.
Yeah, yeah. Finally, so the Rockets, a division rival of sorts, they got both Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Is it going to be a situation for you, and I, again, not knowing you, not knowing how you feel about those guys, is it going to be a situation where you kind of enjoy watching the Rockets and you'll be pulling for them, or will there be some, like, Schadenfreude and you kind of want the Rockets to struggle with the new additions?
I don't know if I want them to struggle, but I think I've already pigeonholed myself where I don't think they're – I've made it very clear I don't think they're – I think they're a 500 team. Yeah. I think that they're a very good offensive team, and I think they're a very bad defensive team. And so it's not – I'm going to give – you know, the first time Ryan Anderson comes back to, you know, the Smoothie King Center, I hope that the fans give him a standing O. Even, you know, I hope they don't boo Eric Gordon. I'll just leave it at that. I don't think, the injuries aren't something that he wished upon himself. And so the fans don't, you know, look upon him terribly kindly, but I don't think he's brought that on himself. So, but you know, whatever happens. Houston's a division rival, and I'm not going to root for them by any stretch, but, I see them as a 500 team and a fringe playoff team. I think them and Dallas are going to be fighting for the, or maybe even Minnesota, I guess, will be fighting for that eighth and final playoff spot.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for your time, Mason. Can you tell people where they can read your stuff online?
Yeah. So, I write for Bremer Street Shots, the ESPN True Hoop Network affiliate for the Pelicans. We've got a lot of good writers. There's been a lull for the last, you know, month or so, but, you know, getting the podcast going, getting the writing back going, Got a lot of good stuff coming out, so be sure to check out the site.
Perfect. And you guys follow Mason. He's on Twitter and also on lots of podcasts this week.
Yeah, so, apparently so.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch, man. Really appreciated it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks to Mason. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Mason Ginsburg. That was good stuff talking about the Pelicans. But actually, we are not done. I am, as I told you earlier, going to call Adam Mares, friend of the program, Denver Nuggets fan, and a dead ringer for comedian Ken Marino to get an update to see if he has figured out who Ken Marino is yet. Hey, Adam, it's Keith.
What's going on, dude?
Hey, man. So I'm just bringing our listeners up to speed. We had you on a couple months ago talking about the Denver Nuggets. And I told you that the one time I met you and spent, you know, maybe all of 2 hours around you, I thought you were the perfect doppelganger for comedic actor Ken Marino. And at the time, you weren't really sure who that guy was. So now I wanted to check back in. Do you know who he is? And did you watch Party Down as I recommended?
Well, first of all, Party Down, that was a great recommendation. That's a really good show. I don't even think I'd ever heard of it before, but it's actually really hilarious.
It's a great show. Great show.
But, yeah, that guy is a total idiot.
Well, I mean, yeah, his character is an idiot.
Well, so I remind you of just a really talented actor that plays an idiot.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, the character Ron, he's focused and driven. Like, he's got a, you know. He has a passion.
You twist this to make it sound like there's some kind of compliment in there, but there really isn't.
That guy. I mean, he is prone to depression. He struggles with drug abuse. He's an idiot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me to a T. I didn't really want to bring up my heroin addiction, but no. The show's like about, you know, failure and lowering expectations, which I kind of like. So I guess there's that. There's that I could take, I could appreciate, but you're going to give me like a personality complex now.
Well, I mean, again, I'm just saying, yeah, it's not so much the character. It's for me, Ken Marino, I most know him from that. And he's in a bunch of other movies. He's in, you know, he's in a bunch of different, you know, TV shows that are comedies.
Does he play the same character?
Yeah, he pretty much always plays that character.
You know what? I'll accept it.
The interactions, like just now when I was messaging you to say, like, are you ready to Skype? And you were like, I'm born ready, bro. I hear that in Ken Marino's voice. Like,
I channeled it for that conversation.
When I brought this, when I mentioned this on Twitter, several other people chimed in to said like, oh yeah, I've thought that. Or yeah, like that's absolutely right. So I'm curious.
Which is only more infuriating.
It's just you're a playful, fun, comedic type guy.
Okay.
And again, I feel like you guys had similar body types. Internet says Ken Marino's like 6 feet tall, which in Hollywood translates to like 6'5". And you're like 6'5", right? Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. 6 feet in Hollywood is definitely a giant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he just seems like, you know, like he's got, I don't know.
I will say this. His haircut is like the like 90s cartoonish flat top, which I really hope that's – not that it's a huge deal, but I really hope that's not my haircut.
I don't –
what I'm going for.
Honestly can't remember. Just the dark hair. But I'm curious, has anyone else in your – like who's around you on a regular basis? Has anyone else in your life – like have you brought this up to them and have you gotten any feedback on that?
I haven't – I mean I haven't really brought it up. It's not a thing I advertise. Like, hey, this total doofus. Do I remind you guys of him? That's not like an opener.
You should say this successful Hollywood actor. Do I remind you of him?
I'll tell you what. I always get Ray Romano, who's like 60. So I guess I'm at least happy to be compared to somebody that's like my age.
Well, Ray Romano. I mean, he's goofy.
He's goofy too. Damn it.
You just think he's played more respectable, more mainline roles. That it doesn't bother you as much?
You're right. Ken Marino is kind of a new age Ray Romano. God, this is terrible. This is horrible news you keep bringing to me.
Well, I also think – I don't know the name of the movie. He's also in a movie where a monster comes out of his butt and lives in his butt. Ken Marino, that is. So I don't know if you want to check that one out.
This is quite an image for all of you out there. this is what people will think of now whenever they see me tweet something.
It's called Bad Milo because I just Googled Ken Marino butt monster. And yeah. So maybe check out the film Bad Milo. I've never seen it. That's not my thing. But
okay.
All right. Well, so
that one was a good recommendation. So I guess maybe I'll take another.
So you're not over. You're not. Well, I can't. Again, I have never seen Bad Milo, so I can't give it a thumbs up or down. But if that sounds like a comedy you want to see,
okay.
But so you like the recommendation? You're still vaguely offended by the comparison to Ken Marino.
Of course, nobody wants to be compared. I mean, everybody, I think their perception of themselves is so much greater. So I would have really hoped, you know, George Clooney or you know, Gandhi or something like that. But this goofball, I guess, yeah, that's quite a bit off of what I was hoping.
All right. Well, just to close it up, can you say no? I just want to hear you say.
Now I see why you had me on. You had me on just to get this soundbite.
I want to hear you say no personal business on company time.
Hey, no personal business on company time, okay?
That's good. Let's see. I'm gonna compare these sound files. I think we're gonna make it happen. All right. Well, Adam, thanks for joining. Anything you want to plug since you took the time to?
Absolutely not.
Good.
I don't want anything I've done to be associated with this 5 minutes.
Good. It's fantastic. Well, I hope you enjoy watching the Nuggets being in Omaha where you can't follow them.
Oh, it's terrible. It's a shame.
All right. Well, thanks, Adam. Pleasure Thanks. Talking to you. Have a good one.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks to my guests, Mason Ginsberg and Adam Mares, for being a good sport. Follow us on Twitter at FastBreakBreak. Like us on Facebook. Write those iTunes reviews. Get ready for some exciting news about our upcoming season and Rabble.tv. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.